I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the award-winning Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, published by Henry Press, and the host of the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Every other week, I chat with an author who writes novels on the not-so-gritty end of the crime fiction spectrum. If you prefer mystery without hardcore sex and violence, join us in the Cozy Corner. Welcome.
I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, published by Henry Press, and host of the Cozy Corner podcast for the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Joining me in the Cozy Corner today is Sean Riley Simons. She's the author of Sean Riley Simons. I apologize.
Yes.
She is the author of the Red Carpet Catering Mysteries. Her next book is Murder on the Chopping Block. That'll be the seventh book in the series, and she's joining me today to talk about that. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So why don't you start out by telling us about your Red Carpet Catering series?
Absolutely. Thank you. Oh, and I have to mention that I was in Mexico in August with my family for a week, and everyone called us Simons there because that's the that was the pronunciation, so I kind of got used to that, and it's actually more a little more elegant sounding, I think. So I kind of like to go with the Simons. It's like, oh, pretty. You know, Simons is, yeah, very American. But thanks again for having me. This is the Murder on the Chopping Block is the seventh book in the Red Carpet Catering mystery series, and the series is based on the experiences that I had along with my sister working behind the scenes on movie sets. So my sister is a chef. She went to culinary school. And when she graduated, they sort of asked her, what, you know, career path would you like to follow? And she said, well, I don't really want to work the line in a busy restaurant in New York City and never really get to be the head of the kitchen. So they had all these other opportunities. And she said, oh, you know, I love movies. I'll go do that. And she got put on a movie right away. And worked in New York, and she worked in LA in different places. So here and there, she would have me come and help her out, like be her sous chef. And we did a lot of dinner parties and things together. And then there was a movie that was being filmed here down in DC area. And they called her up and she said, hey, my sister's actually available too. And they hired me on as well. So through all of those experiences, all of those sets and dinner parties and catering gigs and things like that, when it came time for me to sit down and write a book or a series, I thought, well, what's, you know, the most interesting thing I've done? I said, I think that's probably what, you know, because I also did sales and marketing, which isn't the most fascinating career, you know, I mean, it can be. But I love culinary mysteries, and I was a big fan of people like Catherine Hall Page and just all of the different culinary mystery authors that came through Malice year after year after year. And I thought, well, you know, I've never seen a movie set catering series, so I will be the one to write that. So that was where the inspiration of the series came from. Part of experience, part of inspiration, part of just following kind of the write what you know thing. So.
And tell us specifically about the next book, Murder on the Chopping Block.
Right. Well, that book, every single book I set in, they are traditional mysteries. They're cozies, technically. And that usually encompasses sort of the same town and the same set of characters. You know, it varies from book to book and different in other people's series. But in my books, they go to a different location every single book because movie sets move around the country. And so I always have to pick a new location for them to be in. And my small town is a movie set because when you're on a set, there's usually 300 people or so every day coming into work. So you have, you know, the actors and the people, you know, the producers, people from, you know, in the offices basically, but then you have people like carpenters and you have chefs and you have wardrobe people, you have makeup people. So there's a community of people that come through to make this production happen. And that to me is my small town. So my one challenge is I have to have a whole new set of characters every time, except for my main characters, of course. And then I have to choose a location. So this one, I've always picked places that I've lived or visited frequently. And I'm kind of running out of places like that. This is my seventh book. I haven't lived in that many places. So I thought, oh, I just was inspired to do something in California because I love Napa. I love that whole area. And I have actually traveled up there in my past. So I set it in a fictional town, sort of like Monterey, but not really Monterey, but it's kind of like that. It's a, you know, kind of a seaside place where there's lots of big waves and cliffs and things. And I always thought that was kind of romantic out there. So that's where it's set. And in this one, my main character is working on a movie where there's an accidental shooting on the set, and one of the actors ends up dead, and she doesn't think it was an accident. So she's looking around into what happened, and she's working for a family that owns the production, that owns the studio that the film is being made from, but they also do TV shows and different kinds of things. And they ask her to be a judge on a culinary competition show, which, because I love those. I love all those shows. I watch every single one of them, all those like Top Chef, like all those. I watch them all. So I wanted her to be a judge on one of those shows. And then someone ends up not making it through the production of that show either. So she thinks maybe those are connected. So that's the book number 7, Murder on the Chopping Block.
Now, I'm assuming on the movie sets that you and your sister worked on, no one actually got murdered.
No, not that I know of. Not on the set exactly when we were working, at least. No, but there was an accident on one of the movies we worked on. There was an accident where one of the main actors was, they were doing a car chase kind of scene, and the car went out of control and injured the actress, and but she was fine. She walked away fine.
Oh, good.
So that was the closest we came to anything. I think mishaps. But then as a mystery writer, like, well, was it really an accident? Or did somebody really want to take her out? You know, but I don't think so. Not in real life.
So where do the inspirations for the crimes that happen come from? Or do you just make them up?
Some of them have been inspired by real crimes. Like the one in this current book, for instance, I was always really interested in the Brandon Lee accident that happened, Bruce Lee's son, so that was sort of kind of the inspiration for this one. It's a similar sort of accident, and I remember when that happened and I read all about it, because I'm a long time fan of Hollywood and movies and drama, so I read all the celebrity things. I keep up with everything. Except sometimes today I'm like, who are these people? I'm not sure who these celebrities are. I'm more of a movie star person, but that's sort of the kernel of inspiration for this current murder in this book, because I always thought that was so tragic and sad, how it happened. And, you know, and I remember going to see the movie and just being really upset by all of the things. And, you know, there was a trial and there was an investigation and all this stuff. And I do kind of draw off on real life things. I always call it the Law and Order effect. Like when you're watching Law and Order, you're like, what is this? What story are they doing this week? I'm like, oh, they're doing, you know, Jeffrey Epstein. Okay. You know, like, but they would like change it. You're like, okay, well, that's where they sort of got that from. So I kind of do that, but not as direct a lift as they do. That's how I go about it.
Do you include their disclaimer about this isn't based on any real case, even though everybody knows it is?
Yeah. Well, we put that in the beginning of, in the copyright pages. We're like, no, I don't want to be sued. Thank you. you change it enough where it's not, you know, because things like that have happened to other people. So that's how I sort of like get away with it, I think.
Now, you're 7 books into the series. So what do you find the most challenging? Coming up with a new location for every book, or coming up with the different cast members, or getting the behind the scenes technical details right, or coming up with a new crime?
None of the new crime thing, you always want to kind of not repeat yourself. So then when you're getting into 8, 9 books, because I have 3 more that I have to think of, at least on my contract. So, you don't want to, because I do, you're like, oh, I really like this kind of trope, but you've already done that. So you sort of want to expand and not do the same book again. So I do, the challenge for me is always to make them a unique experience for you. You don't want it to be, you're writing a traditional mystery, so there's a format that you follow, because, you know, you want it to be resolved at the end. There has to be, you know, red herrings that come through, but the challenge becomes you've written a lot of those already and you don't want to repeat yourself. So I just always am sure to really make it unique. The crimes are unique each time. You know, you don't want to have the similar kind of suspects. You know what I mean? Like, you just want to sort of make it a fresh experience. So that is one of the challenges. And the other one is I have a lot of B characters, or, you know, they're behind this. They're important to the main characters. They're family members or friends or different things. And just to keep them sort of, it has to be a reason for them to be there because they're traveling around the country. Like, well, why is her dad at everything? You know, so we have to like bring, like realistically, why is the family all there all the time? But that's another challenge. And sometimes they take a backseat and they don't show up in every book, or they just do for a minute. But just remembering what happened to them and making sure that their story arcs come forward, not in the front of the house way, but you know what I mean? You want to sort of layer it in the background. And, you know, you mentioned someone's going to get married in the last book. You don't want to be like, well, whatever happened to them, you know, you just to kind of bring along. So that those are the two things, just keeping all the, I feel like it's like playing an instrument, like keeping the orchestra has to keep the background music going while the person is taking a solo sort of thing. So that's how I, those are my two challenges, but it's okay. I can do it.
And do you find it challenging following the same main characters over a 7-book series or 10-book series eventually?
No, I think it might be if you're getting into the 20s. Like, I don't know how some people, you know, like with Catherine Hall Page, who I adore. I mean, her books, you have to sort of slow the aging process down because it's been 20 books. I mean, they're not 70, you know? So like, you know what I mean? There has to be like a break in reality somewhere where it's like, well, they can't be running around chasing criminals, you know? So there's that. But for me, I've built it from the very beginning, the first book, basically everyone meets each other. So then it just sort of progresses slowly through each book. The character arcs grow and people's relationships develop, change, you know, usually in a positive way. But it's been fun, actually. It's like, well, so the main thing is like thinking of what's the crime going to be? What set are they on? Where are they? And then the other piece is, well, how are they feeling this time? Like, are they going to move forward in their relationship? Are they taking a break? You know? And so it's just part of it, but I think it's fun. I don't find it challenging. I think it's fun to think about how they're progressing.
And did you decide your main character's overall arc at the beginning of the series, or you just kind of figured out as you go along and just sort of see how things shape up as each book goes, or somewhere in between?
Yeah, because I started out, well, when I wrote the first one, I was like, well, maybe I'm just writing one book. You know, like, who knows if anyone's going to want this, you know, or like it. So then it turns out people did like it and wanted it. And then my first contract was for 3 books. And I guess as a writer, you're sort of like, well, this is, you know, maybe I'm not going to get another contract. So maybe I should wrap stuff up, or, you know what I mean? Like, you're trying to think of like, how is this going to end? I don't want to leave it like a big cliffhanger at the end of a book, or relationship wise kind of thing. So halfway through, I think it was like beginning writing my third one, I figured out I found out I was going to get 3 more. My contract was extended. I was like, oh good. I don't have to like run everyone down the aisle of this book if I'm married or whatever. It's okay. I have more time. So I had them sort of like, my third book, I had my character where they're having kind of relationship problems. And, you know, I was sort of new writer and I just was trying to, it's making it realistic. Like, it's not always smooth sailing. It's just the way it goes in life. You know, they were just arguing a little bit. They were arguing a lot in this book. And I got so many notes about this. Like, well, what's going on? Are they going to break up? Oh my God. I said, I can't believe people are paying attention to this relationship, like more than the mystery of this one, you know? Wow. So that like kind of gave me a glimmer. I was like, okay, so this is something I need to be careful with. Because they got back on track, you know, the next book. But I thought, wow, it was a learning experience. It was a very cool moment for me because people were actually worried. Like, are they going to break up? I'm not going to read this anymore if they're going to break up. I was like, oh no. So yeah, that part is really fun to see the reactions that you get from the readers when you experiment here and there. And they kind of learned my lesson with that one. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to have a breakup probably. I want to bum everyone out.
Now, you have your main character listening to a podcast in this book. Are you a podcast fan?
I am. I am a podcast fan. I like true crime podcasts a lot. And I've been listening to your podcast as well. So, but I think we have such a busy, we all have such busy lives these days. It feels like we're the first one saying that. I'm sure our parents were busy too, but it's like, I feel like I never have time to do anything, but I love throwing on a podcast when I'm just doing other things like around the house. I can, you know, make dinner and put it on and learn something or be entertained. So I think that's why their popularity is surging, because you can sort of layer it in with other stuff that you're, you don't have to sit there and watch TV. You know what I mean? It's like, it's on and you're, you know, you could go for a run or a walk through the woods, maybe not a walk through the woods with ones I listen to with all the murder people jumping out and killing people. Walk through the woods. But yes, I do like podcasts. I do. And mostly they're all mostly crime ones. True crime is what I like.
Is the podcast in Murder on the Chopping Block based on any real life podcast, or is that one you made up yourself?
Inspired by different ones, but it's fictional. I did like the idea of having one where people were trying to crowdsource the crime. You know what I mean? Like, and I think there is one like that, one or two like that that I heard about. I haven't listened to them though, but where they sort of like cold case kind of stuff, and they put out the crime, and then they have people, the listeners, chime in and say what their theories are, or provide clues or different things. Like, I always thought that was a cool concept. And I'm going to take that podcast into the next book and sort of flesh it out a little bit more, because I just love that idea of there's all these different things. People are so in tune with each other now just through different podcasts and shows that we watch, and all these crimes. There's all these amateur detectives in real life trying to solve real crimes, you know, really? In the world, because there's so many of us that are so inspired by figuring stuff out and finding justice and giving relief to victims and different things like that. So that all of that just really fascinates me. So I wanted to sort of touch on it.
And what are some of your favorite podcasts to listen to?
Well, I love My Favorite Murder. I listen to that a lot. It makes me laugh, although the subject matter is, you know, terrible. But the women are so funny, and they're comedians, so they make you laugh while you're listening to it. I listened to one called Bear Creek, which I thought was really fascinating. I think it was called Bear Creek, and it was about, I don't know if you remember the case up in New Hampshire, the woman and the children that were found in the barrels out in the woods. They found, they had been there for like 20 something years.
Oh, yes. And, they couldn't identify them for a long
yes.
time. Yes.
Yeah. So that was one, and that podcast just focused on that, just that case, and it was eight episodes, but it was just fascinating because they went from, you know, they did the whole history of the whole case, and that I just couldn't stop. I binged that one. I think I listened to it like in a couple of days. I listened to yours. I like yours.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just if I, what did I, oh, it was Hollywood and Crime. That's a good one, especially for my, because I write books about movies and I love movie stuff. Hollywood and Crime is cool. And I'm really interested in the Black Dahlia case. So I listen to anything I can get my hands on when it comes to, Elizabeth Short. So I like to, and they did that. They did a whole season on the Black Dahlia and how there were other crimes that were a lot like hers. But for some reason, that's never been a thing that people know. You know, it's like, you know, everyone sort of, everyone knows about the Black Dahlia. But meanwhile, there were six or seven other women that were killed brutally in the same, like in the same area. And they don't really think they solved those either. So that's fascinating. So I throw those on when I'm out running at the park, and I'll be running. I'm like, oh my God, it's not really good for you're like, I'm in show. I can't believe the snooze I'm getting just now, you know, but I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks for some reason. If I'm on a long drive, I can usually do an audiobook, but I don't like how I have to stop and, you know, stop and start a book. I want to just listen to the whole thing. So I like podcasts because it's like, okay, here's an hour. And for me, that's 5 miles at the running. So I was like, okay, I can do my 5 miles and listen to 1 hour of a case or, you know, something interesting. And then it's done and I can move on to the next thing, the next. I like the episodic part, you know, piece. I think that's why I don't like, I just don't prefer listening to, I'll read a whole novel, you know, over a week, but I don't like to listen to a whole novel over a week, if that makes any sense. I don't know if it does. But,
that makes sense. I actually agree with you. I find that podcasts are much easier for me to follow and listen to than audiobook, unless it's a short story that I'm listening to, because of the stopping and starting. And I don't have, you know, the 6 to 10 hours to devote in one sitting to listening to the entire novel.
Yeah, exactly. I like how there's a ending and then I can pick it up the next time I sit down, you know, or do something else. So, but yeah, those are mine. Those are what I like. What do you like?
What do you listen to? I like Small Town Murders, I think, is my favorite one, because it's like My Favorite Murder, it's hosted by comedians, so it is funny, although they're careful not to make fun of the crime victims, but, you know, the murderers and sometimes incompetent small town police forces are fair game. They actually tell you something about the small town that they're in. And these are guys from, like, one's from New York, and I forget where the other host is from, somewhere in the South, I think. But they pick small towns everywhere and give you the, you know, they'll give you some of the background of the town, some of the history, but then they'll, like, go on and, I don't know whether it's Google or Yelp, but they'll read, like, reviews people have written of the town, which are hysterical because most people hate towns.
That is going right in my queue. I'm listening to that next week. That sounds right up my alley, trust me. Anything like that. And just please send me more recommendations when you get, because it's sort of like, they're also fun to discover, because I hadn't heard of that one, or if I have, I haven't, it's not on my radar. So that will be on my radar, because I will definitely listen to that. But then you discover all these new ones, because it's like, oh, you might like, it's like when you watch Netflix, because there's 5 million things, you know, like, oh, you might like. And then someone's like, why would you think I would like that? Like, that's not what I would like. But yeah, so definitely send any recommendations, now that you know what I like.
Absolutely. And we were, you know, talking about the short stories versus novel on audiobooks, and you write short stories.
Yeah, I do. I enjoy writing short stories. Actually, the first thing I got published before my novel was published was a short story, and I hadn't written anything at all since college, really. And it got picked up for the first resurgence of the Malice Domestic anthologies. And I had nothing to do with that anthology. I sent it in blind. I thought, I don't even know if I can write a short story. And I sent it in and it got accepted. And I was so thrilled. And I thought, maybe I do like short stories. It sort of like progressed from there. And now I'm editing anthologies every year now too. So I do love writing short stories. And I think it's really fun when you write novels, because it's sort of like, I always call it like a palate cleanser, because you can move from the long form, because it's a different skill set. It's like, you know, oh, do I need these 4 words? If I can use one word, that's probably what I should do, you know, because you only have a certain number of words. So you can get, you know, you have to be really precise and sort of like in a mousse bouche instead of like a big full meal. And that's what I really enjoy doing it. And I think it helps, I think it strengthens both sides. When I go back to writing the novel, I feel it's sort of like cross training at the gym. Like, I feel like I've honed those muscles, like, okay, these are excess words. You don't need these. You know what I mean? So
right. That's
what I enjoy about it. It's a lot of fun. Plus you can get punch it out. Like, you're done 5,000 words. You got a good story in there. You got you have a beginning, middle, and end, and you told something, you know, it's a fun, enjoyable, good crime, and you're done. You move on to the next thing. So that part is fun too.
And how is editing the anthologies different from actually writing the short stories?
I love editing. It's a lot of fun for me. And I do the developmental edits for the Malice Domestic every year now. And I also do the Best New England Crime Stories for New England for Level Best every year. And it's so fun because, the anthologies by nature, there's so many different kinds of stories. So many different kinds of writers, and every single year for both of them, they put out a blind submission. They get, you know, hundreds of submissions, hundreds of things come through, and then people judge blindly. They read them, give them a score, and then we are, you know, you select about 25, 30 stories for each of them. And so then they get handed over to me, and the Malice ones, I haven't read a lot of them already, so they're coming into them fresh. And every single year, there's people that, you know, are accomplished short story writers that you see in a lot of anthologies, and they're kind of known for their short stories, and they're wonderful. And then every single year, I read equally wonderful stories by people that are possibly being published for the very first time. And that's really exciting. And they're, you know, so excited to be in the anthology. And then I'm editing their story, and I send them my thoughts. And so the developmental phase, I just read, and I'll say, hey, you know, maybe this guy would say this here, or maybe this is extraneous information. We don't really need that. You know what I mean? You just sort of like give them a whole big picture kind of thing. And, you know, and I always end up saying, like, these are just my thoughts and this is your work, but this is just my impression of it. And, you know, if it were, but it's up to you. You make the choice whether or not you're going to, you can leave it the way it is or whatever you want to do. And I always get positive feedback from, you know, thank you very much, or you made the story stronger, you know, that kind of thing. Because I would never presume to say, you definitely need to change this, or it's terrible. Like, and I wouldn't say that anyway, because it's not, because it's been chosen. But I do enjoy the process. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it makes me a better writer because I can, you know, it's really hard to edit yourself. And I'll send stuff to my editor and she sends it back and she's like, oh, what do you, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I said that 300 times. Like, what is wrong with me? And that, but you can see it for other people. Like, it's really hard to, like, you can't scratch your own back, you know?
Right.
So I'm reading these people's stories. I'm like, oh, well, and it's never anything like terrible, but it's like, okay, you know, you said this two or three times. Maybe we could find a different way to word this particular phrase. And, oh yeah, I never, you know, cause you, it's your brain is skipping over the things cause your brain knows what you are trying to say, you know?
Right.
But my brain doesn't know what your brain is trying to say. So I'm just going to tell you what I'm reading it, you know, fresh. And, but it's a cool process. And I think it does help. It helps them and it helps me as a writer. Cause then I kind of recognize when I'm doing stuff, you know, you can't do it 100% for yourself, but you can get better each time around, but it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. And I get to meet all these writers and, you know, have developed friendships from it, and it's been really great. It's been a good process. I'm very busy. I'm never not busy, but it's an enjoyable process, and it's an enjoyable career for me. So I'm very, very, I'm not complaining. I have my dream job, so I'm not complaining at all.
And you mentioned that one of the anthologies that you edit is the Malice Domestic Anthology, and you're also right on the board of directors of Malice. So how did you get involved with Malice Domestic?
Malice Domestic, this one coming up this year in May will be my 17th Malice. Wow. So I've been there forever, it seems like. But there's people that are on the board that have been there longer than me. I'm not even been there longest. So 17 years ago, or 18 years ago, I moved back from, I was living in New York City, and I'd been up there for about 8 or 9 years. So I didn't, and I went there directly out of college. And before that, I'd only been at my high school here for like a year and a half, 2 years. So I didn't have a big foundation of friendships here when I came back. I was like, kind of like, oh, here I'm back. And I didn't know anyone when I left. You know, here I am. I didn't know anybody. So I thought, well, need to figure out how to make some friends and do some stuff, get involved with things. So I saw this thing called Malice Domestic. I'm like, what is that? And I was like, oh, cool. It's a fan convention for mysteries. I love mysteries. I have always loved mysteries. And it was down the street, basically. It's, you know, Bethesda. DC is very close to me. So I went to the first one and I just thought, this is such a cool thing. I can't believe there's 600 people here that are nerds like me that like this stuff, you know? So, but I had a wonderful time and I was in the one of the panels and this woman turned around and she said, oh, hi. What, like, I just think I was like, I looked out of place too. Like nobody had ever seen me before. Cause that came to figure out these people have been doing this every year since 1989. And I'm wandering into their thing. And, you know, there's always new people every year, but there's that core group that's always been there. And she's one of the core group. So she turned around and said, hey, oh, your last name is Riley and you spell it correctly. And I just laughed because her maiden name was Riley. Oh. And I was like, yes, that, as a matter of fact, she goes, well, what are you doing here, basically? And I was like, oh, you know, my sob story of have no friends kind of thing. And I said, well, no, I'm a big fan of mysteries and I'm, you know, and she asked, just sort of gave me like a little mini interview. Like, you know, I said, well, I was in sales and marketing in New York and now I'm here and blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, you know, as a matter of fact, our PR person is leaving the board and it seems like you'd be perfect for that. Would you be interested? And I said, yes, I would be. I can't believe it. I've only been here for like a day. Got invited to be on the board just because my name was Riley. And the chair at the time was Tom O'Day and he and his wife Marie came all the way out to Frederick. It's like an hour from where they are. And we had a nice lunch. They took me to lunch and they gave me a little mini interview and just kind of gave me the rundown on what Malice was. And I said, yeah, but, you know, I'm definitely interested. And then they asked, I was nominated to the board and I did PR for the first couple of years. I just did like little press releases. And that's before we had Facebook and stuff. So I had to mail press releases to places. And that was that. And then it's just, I never left. And then the registrar retired several years later and I took over her position. And then, so that's how it worked out. But I've been there forever now.
Cool.
And I mean, almost forever, almost, it's a long time, 17 years.
That is a while.
So, yeah. In the meantime, I got married, I had a baby and now I have a 9-year-old and they all knew me when I was just a single person, you know,
wow.
So they've watched me grow through all of those things. And they are like my second family. You know, I love the board. I love everyone that I work with. And to me, it's like a big giant family reunion every spring, or like I'm organizing a wedding every spring because I do all the banquet stuff. And You know, I organize all the seating arrangements, and, you know, there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes, and we meet once a month all year long. We do take the summer off now. That was my suggestion. I said, can we take the summer off? Because, you know, it's, you know, we're all busy and things like that. So, but yeah, it's, we go to meetings on a Sunday once a month, all throughout the year. And it, you know, of course there's different times of the year. It gets more intense. We're planning and stuff. And, we're launching into going to be our busy time here, because the Agatha ballots go out at the end of the year. We get January 1, and then we get, you know, sort of from January on, we're never not working on MetLis. It's just the way it sort of goes. But it's a wonderful experience. I've met thousands of fans and writers and made friends, you know, lifelong friendships. And, you know, I got to have tea with Louise Penny a couple times, you know, like it's been very, very fortunate. It was a very lucky turn of events when I went to that first one and was invited to be a part of it. And I think I wouldn't be talking to you today for sure if it hadn't been for MetLis Domestic.
This is so true.
Yeah. Nobody would like Sean who. So yeah, I love it there, of course.
And speaking of all that hard work, what's it resulted in upcoming for MetLis 2020?
MetLis 2020 is going to be awesome. We're very excited. We have Julia Spencer Fleming as our guest of honor. Yeah, and we love her, and she was a long time attendee for a really long time, and she sort of took a break, and now she's back, and we're so thrilled to have her back. And it's just going to be a fabulous, fabulous time, like always. And we have some different, you know, every year we try to bring some new fun things to do and surprises. So we have, at our new venue, last couple of years, we have this theater where we can show, you know, episodes of shows. Like last year, 2 years ago, we had, I think, 2 episodes of Vera, and Anne Cleese was there, as well as Brenda Blevins. She came and talked to the audience, which was wonderful. And then last year, we partnered up with Acorn TV, and they brought episodes of shows. And I think
the Queens of Murder,
the Queens of Mystery. Yes, and then we had the Murdoch too. So, and I think this year we're going to have another Murdoch. That we always try to get an episode that no one's ever seen before. So we're working on a Murdoch for this year, and another big surprise. So but it's really fun, and that's the fun part, because we get to do all this cool stuff, and it's like we're throwing a party for our family of 600-700 people that are coming, and hope they enjoy themselves. And yeah, it'll just be, you know, our usual good time. So I hope you're coming. You are coming.
Yes, I am coming. I think I already registered.
Good. Well, you know, I start pestering people. Because I will be that person who says, are you registered yet? I don't think you're registered. What's going on? Are you coming? So, I mean, that's why I got my job, because I'm not afraid to ask. Well, you know, you need to be coming back here. We need to see you there. So, but yes, I love doing it, and it's a lot of fun. And like I said, it's been, you know, it's sort of the ground zero for everything else that's happened for me.
And what's the theme of this year's MetLis Anthology?
This year it is Mystery Most Theatrical. So all of the stories will have something to do with theater or shows, something stage, you know, movies. I didn't pick this one, surprisingly. we all get to, I know, I was like, sounds like Sean would like that, but I do like, I like everything, basically. So last year was Mystery Most Edible, and it was my turn to choose the theme, so I chose edible, of course. And this year it was one of the other editors, and she chose theatrical, but that's cool too. And I'm not sure what they're going to do for next year. We tossed around some ideas, but I'm not positive yet, but I will know in the next couple of days, because I have to put out the call for submissions by the 1st. And I think, I can't remember what it is. I can't remember. I know we talked about something, but it's not, I don't think it's been official. So stay tuned for that news. But the cool thing with that, with MetLis, we always invite the guests of honor to put in a story if they would like to. And so that's neat. So, you know, you might end up, you know, in a book with a story with Julia Spencer Fleming. You never know, yeah. You know, it just depends on. So it's fun. It's been a lot of fun. And Wildside Press is really great to work with. And they're, you know, they're just really nice people, and they come every year and support us. And that part is fun too. So I get to do a lot of cool stuff. I mean, I'm very fortunate.
It's exciting. It's like writing mysteries and editing anthologies and writing short stories and being on the board of, I'll just say it, the best mystery well, I shouldn't play favorites. One of the best mystery conferences.
We'll take the best. It's okay. You can say it. We're the best ones that do what we do. We'll say that. Well, thank you. But yeah, no, I'm My husband's like, okay, there's no more, you don't need to do any more things, right? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I think three's enough things. I'm like, yeah, three's probably good. I am busy. Because I didn't, when I first started writing my first book, I had just had my son, so I had an infant. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll, you know, let's take him to the park for a couple hours a day, and then I'll go, all right, while he's, you know, napping. And that's what I did. And I had, like, one thing. But I'd taken care of the household, you know, I did that kind of stuff. And now I'm like, oh my God, I have to get this done today. I'm on deadline over, you know. It's like, yeah, I remember when you used to go to the park every day and hang out. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that. It's a long time ago. I'm too busy for that. So we still have fun. But, you know, I have a little bit more on my plate than I used to have.
Now, the Malice Anthology will be available at Malice. Where will Murder on the Chopping Block be available?
Also at Malice. So, the main bookseller always has my books, which I'm so grateful for, which is very, very nice. And they're also available online and in bookstores and in libraries. I'm in a lot of libraries, which is very, I love libraries. I'm a huge library fanatic. I go every week on Wednesdays. I met my library friends know me. They're like, hi, Sean, you're here again, you know. So, and my son has had a library card since he was two. So we are library people. So I'm in, but I'm like, it's not every, I'm like, I'm in libraries in North Carolina and New York and Maryland and other places around the country, but not everyone in the world, but you know, it's really cool. That's like more important to me than anything else. It's like, I walk into the library to see my books, and I'll never forget the first time my son, I think he was four or five, and I had several of my books were in our local library, and I just wanted to go show him. I was like, this will be fun. So I took him upstairs to the adult section, and we looked. And he saw my books. He just started grabbing them, putting them in his bag. He's going to take them home. And I said, oh, well, we can leave these for the other people to check out because we already have these at home. He just thought that was so, he just couldn't believe that my books were there and he wanted to bring them home and look at them. So I let him bring them home. But I was like, oh, that's so cute. But yeah, I love libraries.
Me too. They are great places.
Yeah. It's just such a good vibe usually. Like, you know, it's quiet or not quiet or whatever it is, but it's just to be surrounded by all those books and history. And I just, you know, there's nothing else. You don't feel like that anywhere else, you know, and I love bookstores too, but there's just something special about libraries. So it's a community thing.
Yes. And when can the community find Murder on the Chopping Block? What's your book birthday?
Oh, that one came out in, October. It's already out, so it's been out for a couple months now. But yeah, that one came out, and my next one is due, and that one I'm calling Murder on the Side, just as a working title. I think usually my working title stick, and that one is due into the editor in January, which is hilarious. No, it'll be done, but that one probably, they usually come out around late summer, fall, so that's my cycle that I'm on these days. So that's the next one. And that one takes place, and it's so funny, as I mentioned to you earlier, that I always set books in places I've lived or traveled to a lot. So I'm like, sitting down to write this book, I'm like, oh, where should I put this one? I said, oh. I'm like, oh my God, I've never written one about Maryland. Like, I literally have lived in Maryland longer than anywhere else. And I'm like, why did I not, why is my brain like that? Like, I can manage a giant convention, but I can't think of, like, obvious stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do one in Maryland. Oh my God, why did I not think about this, like, the first book? So I'm writing this one in Maryland. Okay. And the fun thing about this one is my best friend and her husband, they do the ghost tours. I finished high school right near Antietam Battlefield, which is near Sharpsburg, Maryland, Shepherdstown, West Virginia. So it's, Antietam was it's called the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. And Boonesboro is where I went to high school, which everyone kind of knows as Nora Robertsville. So that's where she lives and owns the bookstore and owns the pizzeria and owns the inn and owns the whole town. So it's really cool and historic. And my mom, I just was there today. My mom lives on the main street. So my best friend from high school, who I've been friends with for 33 years, and her husband, they do the ghost tours. And there's a lot of ghosts around there because it's, you know, Civil War. So I sat down with them last week for dinner. We had a really nice dinner, and we talked about, I said, give me some stories, give me some ideas, give me some stuff to work with here. So it was like my research. It was also fun. We had a lot of wine, and we talked, and we ate tapas, and it was wonderful. But this is what I call heavy research, like having a beautiful dinner with my friends, and talking about ghosts and murders that happened in the Civil War. But did you know, he told me a fascinating piece of information which is going to play into the book. I was thinking, because I knew there were female Civil War soldiers, I just know that, because I mean, how could there not be, of course? But I had a number in my head that was significantly lower than the actual number that he's researched and that he's, you know, he's a historian. He's an historian. He's aficionado in this whole subject. He told me that there were 600 to 700 female soldiers that fought in the Civil War.
Wow.
And these are women that, you know, dressed as men. You know, they weren't like, yeah, I'm a woman. You know, they were fighting for their cause or whatever. And a lot of them didn't want to leave their husbands. A lot of them had no other way to make money, you know, different things. There were different situations, but I just thought that was fascinating. So I just, I'm really interested on both sides, Union and Confederate. And, but yeah, it was so interesting to me. So I'm going to definitely, because my other main character is an actress and she likes to take on these, you know, difficult, hard to watch movie roles. That's why I always make fun of her, because she doesn't do like fun comedies. She always like has to do like she likes a very Angelina Jolie movie choices where it's like, oh, this is going to be really good, but hard to watch. Okay. So she's going to be one of these soldiers like where your life was super hard. And so I like to put her in like really difficult roles where she has to gain weight or cut all of her hair off or, you know, look ugly because she's really beautiful. So I'm just toying around with all these ideas in my head about, I always talk about women and, you know, I think we don't get the full credit for a lot of things as usual in life. And that might be, you know, a very good example of that. So that's where I'm going with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if readers want to find out more about you and your fun wine-fueled research adventures and your upcoming projects, where can they find you?
Well, my website is SeanRileySimmons.com. It's just my name.com. And then if you, I have a newsletter and I send it out monthly and I always put a recipe or two in there. So if you're a food person, that's always fun. And you can find me on Instagram. I take a lot of pictures of food and wine on there too. So that's, I'm Sean R. Simmons on Instagram as well as Twitter. And they're all kind of linked together, but all of that is on my website. So that's all, you can find me through there. And I definitely welcome any kind of reader feedback or emails, or I don't shy away from any of those things. So please reach out and contact me in any way that you feel comfortable in, whatever your platform you prefer.
Okay. All right. And thank you very much for joining me today, Sean. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and finding out some things I didn't know. And I also made some note of some podcast recommendations. Oh, and actually, what's a shout out to your favorite culinary competition show?
Oh, I have never missed an episode of Top Chef. I just love Top Chef. To me, it's like the best. It's like the king of the pile. But I do watch a lot of Chopped, and I watch that every day when I'm having lunch. I throw an episode of Chopped. There's like 500 episodes, you know, so you can always watch a new one. But yeah, those are my go-to ones. But and the British Baking Show. I mean, come on. Like, there's nothing more fun or relaxing just to throw on the British Baking Show. Even if I've seen it, I'll watch it again because it's just so comforting and everyone is so happy and nice, and there's, you know, they're not angry with each other for anything.
True.
And the stuff they make, I can't even believe that these are home bakers and they just make these, you know, a croquembouche. I don't know, like they just do it all the time. It's amazing. So yeah. I love that show too. You can't go wrong with any of the baking ones.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for joining me. It's been great chatting with you. Some fascinating things and great hearing about the upcoming books and the upcoming Malice.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was so fun to chat with you.
Yes, and I will actually see you at Malice, which will be coming up sooner than we realize. Well, maybe not sooner than you realize, but sooner than I realize.
I know I have a countdown on my computer like, oh my god, I have to get ready for that. No, I look forward to seeing you, and I hope we get to sit together again, because we banqueted together last year, if you remember.
Yes we did.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Hung out at the bar.
And you're always, yeah, oh yeah, the bar, trust me, you can always find me there. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be chatting with you. It was really fun.
Great. And this has been Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries. Joining me in the corner today was Sean Riley Simmons, not Simons, author of the Red Carpet Catering Mystery Series. Thank you, listeners, for joining us in the Cozy Corner, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Cozy Corner Podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries and the host of the podcast. Tune in next time as I chat with another author writing on the lighter side of crime. Until then, goodbye.